The Great Localizers. While big business is certainly important for creating middle-class jobs, the fact is that small and medium-sized businesses really do the majority of hiring and firing. When those small and medium-sized businesses are growing and hiring people, the economy is robust. And when they are not, it is in recession. So if there is to be a new middle, small and medium-sized businesses must play key roles. What is exciting and encouraging about the flattening of the world and innovations like the business web is the degree to which they give small business so much more power and so many more cost savings to innovate and compete globally. Joel Cawley, the IBM strategist, calls this localizing the global. As he puts it, there's going to be a huge amount of business for those small and medium-sized firms that learn how to take all the global capabilities that are now out there and tailor them to the needs of a local community. It's the localization of the global, and we're just at the beginning of it. It has enormous potential to be very job-creating. Those who are successful at this will understand the emerging global infrastructure and then adapt all the new tools it offers to local needs and demands. This is going to create a lot of new middle jobs. The localization of the global will be the freelancer who finds a way to use a satellite dish, a DSL line, a BlackBerry, a PC, or some new software to become a book editor or a film editor or an eBay entrepreneur from his or her bedroom. It will be the sports bar owner who learns to use multiple satellite feeds on multiple flat-screen TVs to bring 12 NFL games at once, plus a golf tournament in Europe, a basketball game in China, and a soccer match in Australia to his bar patrons on Sunday afternoons. It will be the coffee bar that is able to keep customers in their seats much longer by offering free wireless connectivity. It will be the small-time entrepreneur who understands that he can now hire Amazon.com to provide a global logistics infrastructure to manage his sale of customized book plates, and who understands he can go online and find a company in China that will make those book plates, and who, therefore, overnight becomes an importer of book plates for bookstores, all sold online. It will be the person who opens up a UPS store and becomes overnight a global supply chain manager for other small businesses. It will be the local auto repair shop that suddenly discovers that it can get cheaper BMW hubcaps and Mercedes windshield wipers from a supplier in Romania than one in Rochester. Finally, it will be people in all sorts of businesses and industries who understand the power of modeling. And I am not talking about Cindy Crawford. Using computer simulation and graphics, you can now bring all sorts of data together to create models that will show you how all kinds of complex things work together before you actually go through the expensive process of building them. As a realtor who learns how to model, you can show prospective buyers the floor plan of a house or apartment and let them move walls around wherever they like. As an engineer who learns how to model, you can do the same with bridges and roads. So those landscape architects, financial planners, home designers, and real estate brokers who get it, who become skilled at working with clients who build, customize, and interpret models, will also find themselves with a pathway to the new middle. These are broad categories, and new ones will surely be constantly emerging. And there are certainly no hard and fast boundaries between these different strategies either. Often people will mix and match them. So let me leave you here with one last example. My childhood friend, Bill Greer, whom I think of now as a great adapter, localizer, and personalizer. He has drawn on all three strategies to secure a place in the new middle. Greer is 50 years old and has made his living as a freelance artist and graphic designer for 28 years. From the late 1970s until right around 2000, the way Bill did his job and served his clients was pretty much the same.
Clients, like the New York Times, would want a finished piece of artwork, Bill explained to me. So if he was doing an illustration for a newspaper or a magazine, or proposing a new logo for a product, he would actually create a piece of art, sketch it, color it, mount it on an illustration board, cover it with tissue, put it in a package that was opened with two flaps, and have it delivered by messenger or FedEx. He called it flap art. In the industry, it was known as camera-ready art because it needed to be shot, printed on four different layers of color film, or separations, and prepared for publication. It was a finished product, and it had a certain preciousness to it, said Bill. It was a real piece of art, and sometimes people would hang them on their walls. In fact, the New York Times would have shows of works that were created by illustrators for its publications. But in the last few years, that started to change, Bill told me, as publications and ad agencies moved to digital preparation, relying on the new software, namely Quark, Photoshop, and Illustrator, which graphic artists refer to as the Trinity, which made digital computer design so much easier. Everyone who went through art school got trained on these programs. Indeed, Bill explained, graphic design got so much easier that it became a commodity. It got turned into vanilla ice cream. In terms of design, he said, the technology gave everyone the same tools, so everyone could do straight lines and everyone could do work that was halfway decent. You used to need an eye to see if something was in balance and had the right typeface, but all of a sudden, anyone could hammer out something that was acceptable. So Greer pushed himself up the knowledge ladder.